we were in Canada talking to clients, and the Canadian client said, yeah, but you just don't understand Vancouver. Vancouver's a different nut altogether. Brian and I were in Colombia, and we were sitting across the table from people that said, oh man, Bogota, it's absolutely different than Medellin, and you're just not going to understand how different it is. And then Brian and I were in Mexico City, and then Baghdad, and then Hungary, and Bydgoszcz, Poland. And everybody says the same thing. That's sort of their knockout, their insurance policy. And the thing was, in every one of those places, we stayed at a hotel that had a bed. We pooped in the toilet. We ate at a restaurant. We had a rental car. We came in with the airport and left with the airport. The problem is that we see things out of context. What we want to do is deliberately focus on the various things that are so different that they're remarkable, rather than take a look at the commonality. The commonality is how you navigate new and incoming information that's nuanced or novel or strange or different. Because what you do then is compare it against what you know. And somebody's going to say, the old guy.
Welcome to the Left of Greg podcast. Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Left of Greg podcast. I'm Brian Marin, the host and creator of the show. As always, I will be joined by human behavior expert, Mr. Greg Williams, who the show is affectionately named after. Here on the Left of Greg show, our goal is to increase your advanced critical thinking ability through a better understanding of what we call human behavior, pattern recognition, and analysis. If you'd like to find out more about what that is, you can check the episode details. If you have any questions or would like us to cover a specific topic, please reach out to us at leftofgreg@gmail.com. Today we are talking about the basic principles that create the foundation for how we articulate human behavior. Normally this is something we reserve for our in-person training courses, and they're typically discussed in a very deliberate manner, but we thought it would be good to share this with all of you. The four main principle beliefs that we talk about today are: people are the same all over the world, people teach you how to treat them, most people want their say, not their way, and demonstrations of intent are more important than motive. Although we only hit the wave tops on each of these principles, you'll still be able to understand them well enough to go and use them after listening to this episode. Please don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find the links in the episode details. And if you enjoy the podcast, please share it with a friend. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. All right, Greg, we'll go ahead and get started, now that I got everything running and ready to go. So first off, good morning to you. As for our listeners, as we're recording it again this week, Greg's in-laws are still in town. So he pops up on video at a different corner of the house each
Never
time.
Know where or when.
And I true. Have to do, if you hear me during this episode, Greg, blink twice if you need help. It's because of that. But they don't have DoorDash in Gunnison, Colorado, do they? Because otherwise I could send you.
They don't have Uber either.
Yeah.
In Gunnison, it's called Goober with the umlaut. So just so you know. No, there's nobody here. You know, if I want something, I got to reach out the door and grab a rabbit or something.
Exactly. So that may change the dynamic slightly on today's recording, but I doubt it. But we got for those of you who are kind of newer listeners and ones that have been listening for a while, we do appreciate you joining and sharing episodes with your friends. We've seen a bump in that, so that's really cool. We do appreciate that. If you can leave a review, that would be awesome. We also, of course, have the Patreon side where we get into some of this more. Do you put up a little paywall to keep some of the riffraff out? It's not much. And we kind of dive a little bit deeper into some of the topics or give examples or and kind of little extras that you otherwise wouldn't get. But I do thank you all for tuning in and listening. And Greg, today is sort of like, I guess, a different kind of episode for us, what we typically do. And I'll sort of start by prefacing it by saying, you know, for those of you who know us or have been to our training, you know, there's a difference sort of between the podcast and our training. Our podcast is, this is us having fun, talking about stuff. It's like our conversations we have in the car. We just share that with people, talk about human behavior and through the lenses of what we do. But it's, you know, I mean, opinion-based testimony, kind of almost off the cuff.
We're having
right?
fun
yeah,
just talking.
A lot of it's not very planned in detail. It's just, let's talk about this topic.
Difference from testifying. You see what I mean? Very different.
And very different from class and what we teach, because that's very, very deliberate. And there's clear intent, and we have certain objectives that we're trying to meet. So we don't go off script in class. We don't have a script, so to say, but we don't ever color outside the lines. We stay within a very narrow bandwidth to do proper knowledge and skill transfer, but also to stay very, very scientific and legal. And so you know, it's a much, much more, the conformity there is much greater than it is on a podcast episode where we're kind of having fun, right? But since we talk about reading human behavior and how to conduct predictive analysis, I thought it'd be good to sort of bring in what we talk about on the Arcadia Cognorati side in class a little bit, but really start with what sort of our bedrock fundamental beliefs, our first principles that we have, that everything gets layered on. So we have, you know, if you were to boil down where we start, I think these are the four things we'll jump into today. So you can take notes on this stuff and we'll get into each one individually. But it is from this basis of how we view the world is then how we conduct predictive analysis, understanding human behavior and the limits of human performance. Meaning with these, so, you then sort of can now you've got the platform to build. Does that make sense, Greg?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So if we came into the dojo, the sensei would still be setting up the folding chairs and sweeping off the tatami, right? This is that information that you need to know at the threshold of walking into the dojo. So for people to get that reference, okay? And Brian, I just want to preface what you were saying about prediction. So folks, don't get prediction wrong. Predictive analysis is not what you think it is. So we had a great discussion about anticipating surprise and embracing risk. So to understand uncertainty, the argument that I would have with the person that posted on LinkedIn recently was they said predict is a four-letter word because you're over-relying on prescience that simply doesn't exist and an inflated belief in your ability to see the future, which borders on hubris. Now, the reason I love that comment so much is, okay, if we were talking about stocks and bonds, I'd agree with you. If we were talking about when your heart would stop, I would agree with you. But if we're talking about you pissed me off with that message and next time I see you, I'm going to slap you on a bar.
Right.
I can predict that because there's a high certainty of that. So you see what I'm saying? So like if we're watching a person and we see that they've got their watch on a specific hand and their coffee cup is on a specific side and we see where their pen is, we can likely predict that person is left-handed. Then what we do is we go on a search to prove that, to demonstrate that. Because the intent is clear. So what they're talking about is this prediction like, hey, tomorrow, this is going to happen. You know, some crystal ball.
Some Nostradamus type thing. No. Yeah. That's a great point because everything we talk about is within a defined context. And what we do is we sort of reduce the complexity and uncertainty by articulating artifacts and evidence in the environment, right? You know,
the environment will only support certain logical outcomes. There is no completely random set of facts. Yes.
No.
Because, the sun is going to rise and we stipulate to that in the east and it's going to go to the west. So if we can stipulate to certain common rules, then that accelerates our decision making. That makes us faster at reasonable decisions, right? Rather than this predictive analysis that these folks are talking about, where that guy's going to come out with a gun. You brought it up.
It's like the stock market example. So you can make very, very general predictions about it, right? Very general at scale at large, or you can get really, really defined and say, okay, look at this company. If these things happen next in the marketplace, this is what they're likely going to do. So really, really big, you can make general ones or very, very specific, but everything in between there, you know what I'm saying? Like you can
prove that. Takeover companies rate their stocks based on that.
Yes.
People would spend and get a bank loan based on that information. That's what we're talking about. That there's a degree of certainty, Brian, that's so high that it's likely that this thing is going to occur and not that thing. That's predictive analysis.
Yeah, I would say more like an insurance company, right? They have an actuarial table and they can say, well, we know based on all of this data that this is what's likely going to happen to you given your set of specific circumstances.
Exactly.
Therefore, here is your insurance rate. I mean, it's that.
And it's almost always right. Right. Yeah. And it's
certainly
right
over time
enough times that they're billionaires.
Exactly. It's always going to more right than it is wrong. So I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah. And
so
no, exactly. I just want to make sure we preface that. Look, we are not predicting the future with a crystal ball. We're predicting the future with human behavior compared against a baseline that we constantly and consistently update.
Right. And so There's four of them that we're going to talk about today. I'll read them all out now, and then we'll go into each one individually.
But
The basic tenets, our fundamental beliefs are, one is that people are the same all over the world. The next one is people teach you how to treat them. The next one is most people want their say, not their way. And then finally, demonstrations of intent are more important than motive. So there's little subsets and extras and everything that we get into and how to do that in class. So I just want to have that kind of conversation today with you, Greg, and I'll let you start with each of these two, sort of defining big picture what we mean, and then we can kind of talk about each one. But that first one is obviously people are the same all over the world. So you tell me, Greg, one, what does that mean? And then what does that mean in the context of what we talk about? And how do I, you know, can I use that sort of to my advantage? Like, can I walk out the door after recording this and go
today?
Yeah. Yep. How do I do that?
Part one, everything that we teach is scientific, and everything is born out of our experiences and testing and evaluation. So we're in Canada talking to clients, and the Canadian client said, yeah, but you just don't understand Vancouver. Vancouver is a different nut altogether. Brian and I were in Colombia, and we're sitting across the table from people that said, oh man, Bogota, it's absolutely different than Medellin, and you're just not going to understand how different it is. And then Brian and I were in Mexico City, and then, you know, Baghdad, and then Hungary, and Bydgoszcz, Poland. And everybody says the same thing. That's sort of their knockout, their insurance policy.
You don't know what it's like here.
In every one of those places, we stayed at a hotel that had a bed. We pooped in the toilet. We ate at a restaurant. We had a rental car. We came in with the airport and left with the airport. The problem is that we see things out of context. What we want to do is deliberately focus on the various things that are so different that they're remarkable, rather than take a look at the commonality. The commonality is how you navigate new and incoming information that's nuanced or novel or strange or different. Because what you do then is compare it against what you know. And somebody's going to say, they don't take my photograph. It'll steal your soul. Still haven't met that tribe, Brian.
Right.
You know, the urban legend tribe, we'll call that. But yet everywhere that we've gone, when we were in Asia, when we're in different parts of the world that shall remain nameless, we got there and it was the same thing. Hi, I'll be your host. This is your TERP translator because we don't speak your language exactly.
This is an AK-47.
Yeah, exactly. This is the weapon system that we use. And, don't go over there. There's mines. Brian, everything was the same. So the more I traveled, the more that I started winnowing that down and said, how can we do a one bite? How can we do a sentence or a term or a sound bite that people would go away with? And people are the same all over the world is the way that we choose to transmit that. And once you can have that epiphany and allow those scales to fall from your eyes, then things aren't that different. So, Brian, in all the countries that you've been in, do they have beggars?
Yes.
Do they have street people?
Yep.
Do they have confidence men?
Oh, yeah.
Do they have prostitutes?
I refuse to answer that question without advice of counsel.
Exactly. No, you don't need your attorney. No, but the idea is it's all been the same, hasn't it?
Right.
And then we could go around and say, hey, this noodle-based meal from Korea, or we can say, hey, an empanada from here. It's all the same.
Well, food is such a great one too, because there's so many people who go, well, no, that came from here. I was like, you're not the first group of people to take some bread or flour substance and stuff it with meat or vegetables
or soak a meat for a long time because it's a poorer cut of meat and you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, and you don't have money.
So
I'll
tell you the other one. It's a great equalizer, Brian. Music.
Oh, yeah.
Every place that we've gone, you know, they didn't play the music to torture somebody, and everybody liked Liszt or whatever type of music. I don't trust jazz, so I'm not a fan, but I know that
music
can span the globe. Yeah. So I would say, folks that are listening, math is universal. Unless you get way out in the solar system, it's consistent. And so if it consistently says A squared plus B squared is C squared, I'll tend to trust that when I'm drawing a reasonable conclusion. So if all people on the face of the planet use math, which we know that they do in one manner or the other, their money might be a different color. Their flag might be a pennant rather than a rectangle. Very rare, but it can happen, right?
Right.
But then when, like when we were, remember the guy in the first time that we hit the ground in Colombia, and we were setting up for a program called Colombia Sat for the Colombian Marines. And the guy said, well, what can you tell me about my country? And I said, well, I've never been here before, but I can look over your shoulder at that flag. I can tell you what those three colors mean. And they were all blown away, you know, and Brian, they were looking at us like we were some sort of Wile E. Coyote super genius. No, gold. There's gold in the ground in Colombia. Okay. Red, blood. Somebody shed sacrifice. Blood, yeah. You know, to go somewhere, you know, blue. Well, it's kind of surrounded by an ocean and they get a lot of their food out of the water. Those type of things are so consistent, nation to nation, country to country, human to human, tribe to tribe, that I'll tell you, there's very rarely a time that we encounter something where it's so nuanced and so remarkable that you and I take note of it. And then what do? We incorporate in a training. But remember, in East Timor,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's the one example. I think it's like Korea where they wear, you know, a black to the wedding instead of white or something
and
like
white
that.
To
you
the
know,
funeral. Right.
So otherwise it's universal the same.
But how many times would you encounter that? Second, what's the cost benefit analysis of knowing that information? And third, how long would it take you to pick up that difference?
Well,
if you just go by that standard, right?
Then you're going to know. Everyone wants to look at, well, you know, in this country, they do things differently and that. And you're looking at all this going, wow. And it causes you. It's like the person who walks in and is like, oh, I don't understand this food. What do you do? It's like, have you been to a restaurant before? Like, so the idea is when I look at what we say, you know, people are the same all over the world is if you start by, you have to assimilate to go, what is this person?
Absolutely.
They are the same as me. So what are they likely doing? Maybe I haven't had that job that I'm watching them do, but I've worked before in my life. So,
yes.
So what is it that they're doing here? And if I look at people are the same, it also, what I like about it is it's I'm less likely to put my perspective or my biases or my my thoughts, feelings, and beliefs on another person versus seeing it for what it is. So if I go, you know, it's kind of like even like we talk about our friends at the Arbinger Institute, they talk about seeing
loving
people, right? Well, that's what we're talking about in details, how to see people. That's what we train people to do. And we have we get very detailed with it so you can arrive at really good conclusions. But if you just back up and start it with that, is people are the same. Okay, how is this person the same as me? Right. Then
exactly.
It allows you to see it from what's going on in their perspective versus just you from an outside observer. And that's
but let's go even further. Let's go planning. Okay. You can plan on the ground in Afghanistan from going from one village to the next. We're going from Kabul to Jabad, Brian.
Yeah.
And you can figure out where a helo can land or it can't land. You can figure out on the road where it would be advantageous to put a mine or not. Where a sniper hide might be. That's predictive analysis. Where we'll probably have to stop to throw a piss because everybody's tired at this level. Where we could get water for the radiator, what a gas station looks like, even though it's different than my gas station.
Right.
And what a trauma center would look like. Where you don't think that there was, roving bands of medical facilities, that there's a med cap in every little village. So the idea is for your future planning, you can say, hey, I've never been in name the country before, but when I land, one of the things I want to look for is organized police forces or security. And I also want to make sure that I know where cold food and drink are that aren't going to poison me. Though, Brian, that level of detail you can go into casually using human behavior pattern recognition analysis because it offers lenses to make things more clear, even if I've never been on the ground there before.
And even here, you know, because I was just having a discussion with someone, reached out to me with some questions on social media, and you know, they were talking about because they do a lot of filming up in Los Angeles, so they got a lot of expensive kit, and there's just chaos. He's like, I'm always trying to figure out, is this person just asking me or talking, want to talk? Are they trying to rob me? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And you know, it gets into the large homeless population, especially out here in California, and you know, you're going up, and it's like, well, we're going to go clean this area out. I'm going to go knock these tents down and these boxes and kick this over. It's like, do you understand? That's like me going to your house and taking a wrecking ball to it while you're inside of it or standing out next to it. What would you act like? Well, it's just some shitty box and a mattress. I go, yeah, not to that person. It's not. That's everything that they have. That's them.
Yeah.
So are you willing to kill someone and defend your home, I bet a lot of our listeners are. So why yep. wouldn't that person feel the same way? And so just understanding it, because otherwise you walk in, well, I don't know why they're acting this way. That's odd. Yeah, it's like, dude, you're burning their village down.
Brian, you know, and the reason it's a key point, go back to the six domains of Combat Hunter. The reason I built those, the reason we built Spec, the reason they work is an atmospheric shift is as profound in Berlin as it is downtown, you know, in Stalingrad. The idea is wherever you go, those print, like, I don't know what the natural line of drift is at some small village along the Mekong Delta.
Right.
But I bet you once we're on the ground, we could figure it out. Or we could ask the old guy, you know, old Chai guy, hey, where yep. do people, you know, go to get to the shop? Watch Marines in the morning when it's breakfast time. I don't have to know the address of the dining facility. All you got to do is follow the Marines. So, yeah. So there's certain life truths, and people are the same is the first life truth that once you wrap your head around it, it'll make the rest of your trip or planning session easier.
There has been a crazy cat lady in every country I've ever been to. Like, yep. That's the thing. You just brought it up and remind my neighbor, the guy who's like, there's an old sage graybeard who's seen that entire village neighborhood yep. street change over their lifetime. And they can tell you everything that's happened. It's
absolutely. Get off my lawn guy exists in every country.
Yeah. So if I look at those, what are these archetypes, sort of these characters that I've known for my life, and how does these person fit into there? Cause they're the yep. same. If I approach it from the same as people are the same, it doesn't make everything a surprise. I now limit what's possible. Okay. I can look at, say, well, what are they likely going to do precisely. Next? It's like, well, okay. There's only so many options that they have because humans yep. act the same all over the world. So
yes, myriad options, Brian, but only so many that are logical and reasonable and matter in this context, matter right. in my safety or security or making money or having my kid be safe at the
yeah. daycare. Well, that's where you see the when I don't use this, when I don't see things this way, that's when I kind of come up with these crazy, well, what if they did this? Well, what if they exactly. come? It's like, but that's so unlikely. That's such a rare occurrence. Well,
and why I'm not going to plan for unlikely.
Why do you think that's going to happen here?
Exactly. So, I may have extra band-aids around the house and a 100 tucked in a mattress for those contingencies, Brian, because they're so rare. They're remarkable. Again, people make movies about them. They're so rare. So I think I'll be fine not spending all of my time on something that's unlikely.
Right. So the next one I kind of want to
it segues right into
exactly what we're talking about, kind of as you get closer, yep. sort of is people teach you how to treat them. What do you mean by that? Again, people teach yep. you how to treat them. What is that supposed to mean? That sounds like external. I'm looking at someone. So how is that, you know, sort of flip that script around internal yeah. as well? Like,
Let's play it as a story. And I'll do the first part of that. I'll okay. give the people teach, and then you give how you represent is how people are going to judge you as well. Right.
Okay.
So look, I'm looking for a serial killer, and this person has racked up some bodies, and the FBI's after him, and local law has got a task force. And so I'm constructing a SNAP VCP, a vehicle control point, and two vehicles come to me at the exact same time. One is the mystery machine, you know, from Shaggy and Scoob.
The van.
The carpeting yeah. on the dash, yeah. the van, and yeah. smoke is pouring out of it. And when I do my cursory glance inside, it's got every brand of food wrapper and, you know, older newspapers and cigarette ashtrays are full. Okay. And while I'm making that glance, I look over and here's this, you know, beautiful, expensive, wonderful convertible. Let's say it's a Tesla. I don't give a shit. Make up your own story. And the guy that's in it's got his polo and his gig line is straight and he's got a perfect haircut. And he comes out, how can I help you, officer? So I got to go Shag and Scoob or you know, the polo guy that's headed for the golf club. Which one is my initial choice? Well, it's golf club guy. And the reasoning is that people teach you how to treat them. So if I've got the temerity, if I've got the patience to stalk you and then kill you and then skin you and then eat you and then make a lamp out of your skin, Brian, that's not Shag and Scoob. Shag and Scoob are going, hey, you know, where's our next joint
completely
coming from?
At bay. Yeah.
Exactly. And we're on the bubble all the time. We're on the X and we're making decisions that are just random based on whatever nuance is coming in front of us. To stay the course. So what do I mean by that? So people teach you how to treat them. A sniper teaches me how to catch and kill them. They teach me by, do they do a ground hide? Are they going to be in an elevated position? Are they likely trained? How many rounds did they fire? Did they fire any rounds? Did they pass up a target? So the environment is constantly transmitting information to you about what's important to that environment. Dad used to say it the best, pick the restaurant on the side of the road that has the most cars parked there and always has an emergency vehicle like a copper parked there. Why? Because those guys are there all the time and they know what your shitty restaurants are and they know what the great diners are, right? So the environment speaking to you means that we have to take those radio dials, Brian, and tune into that frequency. And it was the same wherever we went. The crappy chai place in a foreign country stood out because nobody was there and they were constantly trying to hustle you in, where the other one was overflowing and there was a line outside. So listen to what the people are telling you with their body, with their clothing, with their public tattoos, with standing in front of the graffiti, with the bullet holes, the rubbling. All of those things speak to you because they are universal.
So I, you know, and you're kind of talking about it too from almost like a targeting perspective, but I just look at it as, it is just in general, right? I can't, you know, if I meet, let's say we just, you know, we get introduced, we're at a social gathering, I don't care, whatever it is, or office party or at a meeting, doesn't matter. Hey, Greg, hey, I'm Brian. I don't have time to tell you what's important to me. I don't have time to explain to you who I am, where I come from, what my thoughts and beliefs are, right? But but that's all part of who I am as a person. So that's always on transmit. So the way I look at it is people teach you by the clothes they wear, how they cut their hair, the words they choose to use, the words they choose not to use, how you carry themselves, how you treat other people. All of that, like you talked about, even the clothing and tattoos and all of that stuff is screaming out about me and who I am. And so the idea is it's constantly on transmit and I'm teaching you what's important. So I can sit back and go, what is Greg trying to teach me? If you bring
right
something
now,
up
in whether, this moment
always in the
context
context is always dependent because it's important because that could change, because meaning you could be teaching me one thing right now because you're in pain or upset about something, but tomorrow is a new day, a different situation. So it's like, what are you really teaching me? And then over time I can continue that observation and update your baseline of what you're teaching me, of what's important, what you talk about, what you don't talk about. These are all things that is telling you about that individual as an individual and who they are. And we're all doing that, and just in the way that we carry ourselves. So sometimes going I'm looking at someone, I'm meeting someone, I'm talking to them. I always ask, what is this person teaching me? What are they trying to tell me right now that maybe they can't, especially with kids, right? Maybe they can't articulate very well what their feelings are, what they are, but they
certainly know what they want.
They can certainly act it out. You know what I'm saying? So they act out.
Let's make a comparison, because you just hit on something that everybody can do today. And I want people to walk away from this broadcast and be able to use it this afternoon.
Yep.
So if you're watching this with the live action video and you can see Brian and I, if you've ever met Brian and I, or look up on Google Images, Brian and Greg, you will see us. Okay. What I'd like you to do is conduct a very brief comparison. Which one of us gives a shit about our appearance? Which one of us cares about our hair? Which one of us took more than 3 minutes to buy the clothing that we're wearing in front of you or the glasses?
I took 5 minutes.
But listen, the reason that's important, Brian, is those comparisons will tell you what I'm likely to do in other factors. What's important to me matters because that gives us a starting point.
Yeah.
My right side below the waist is basically useless. It's always fighting against me. So I tie my shoes differently on my right side because I can't get down there and turn the ankle right. So if you look, they're non-symmetrical. So what have I done over the years? Now we get the zip tie looking shoe things because it makes it easier. So each one of those things, when seen over time and in context, speak to me very importantly. Like clearly, I cut my own facial hair. Why? It's never even, you know what I'm saying? And then when it's going off, it starts over. Brian does as well, but Brian takes time on it. Why? Because everything will be like that. Our car will be like that. Our bedroom will be like that. Our wastebasket will be like that. you start seeing a person in a combat zone. And I always compare stuff for combat police at your home, at your school. You see a person in a combat zone throwing away a cigarette before it's all the way down to the gosh damn, cotton filter, then you know that person's got resupply. Why? Because, Brian, when it's a long time between cigarettes, we smoke that son of a bitch all the way down. We'll go like a homeless person to an ashtray and dig out cigarettes that still have tobacco and make our own. That's important to me. It's important to me to know how much fuel is in a car so I can determine where they're going to dump the stolen. So why wouldn't that be important when I see it? But Brian, most people aren't looking. I'll give you a very brief example. So yesterday we were in another place, not in Gunnison, and we were watching a female that was in a big Target store, I believe it was. And Brian, there's very few people in the Target. She's walking, pushing her cart, and she got a text message. When she got a text message, she turned into a zombie. She froze. Yeah. She looked down completely. People were walking by. She had her purse open, all that other stuff. So I photographed her four different times in one lane where she was going and then froze. So guess what she did out in the parking lot? Right in the middle of the parking lot, pushing her cart, she got a text and froze right in the middle of the parking lot, blocking all traffic. Why? Down and in. None of that external stuff matters. So if you're doing it with consistency, and I'm seeing that you're checking out, I can only assume that you're going to do that in another situation. Now, what value is that to me today? Not much. What value is that to somebody that's a purse thief or a rapist or a kidnapper? It's impossible to measure how important those cues that we give off or we fail to give off. And this is where it goes to you. I would say that if you say people are teaching you, okay, I would say you're teaching people as well.
Yes.
What does that mean in comparison?
So that's how you get kind of good at all of this stuff, right? Is you can, when we teach it sort of starting with externally, and then we allow people to come to the realization that, oh, wait, you're not just talking about people out there. You're talking about me. And it's like, yes.
Exactly. But epiphany's huge, right?
Yeah,
right?
It is. And so the idea is you can take this sort of from me. It's like, all right, I want to get good at you know, learning what that means. People teach you how to treat them. Well, you get ready to go out for the day. Look at yourself in the mirror and go, what am I teaching the world? What am I showing them? What am I telling them? And we can, and you got to be careful because we can get stuff wrong. And there was a kid who was a freaking kid, and I won't say where, at the hotel bar working there, who got everything wrong. And and because he was, you know, we were making small talk, and you know, he was almost confrontational at this point. And he was obnoxious, and he was thought he knew.
He didn't know
it. He was young. I mean, you know what I mean?
Really,
it was one
clueless.
Of those one, if you're giving life advice at 22 years old, you know, you haven't lived enough to give life advice. But it was funny because he's like, you know, he was like, oh, you, and one of the things was, he's like, you know, he saw me, he's like, oh, you're married, but oh yeah, I love how you don't wear your wedding ring. And I was like, how naive do you have to be to just come to that weird conclusion? Like, that means something. You don't know what that means to me. You have no clue why I don't wear anything on my wrist or hands or anything like that. You have no idea. And two, like, what does the ring matter? Dude, I'm married. I'm happily married. Like, dude, doesn't matter if I fucking anyone knows that, or if I have a ring on or anything.
That's making that judgment call before taking. And look, Brian, that's having three holes to look through. And so you've got this piece of plywood up at the construction site. You've got a hole that's at eye level in three different locations. And what you do is you walk by and you glimpse in with only one eye, okay, monocular vision, and then walk to the next one. And at the end of the three, you make a decision on who's who and who's who. You can't do that. That's impossible. And anybody that tells you that they can do that, they're a liar. They're a charlatan. They're a fake. And call them out on it. The idea is, the more information that you can process, that you can compare against a fidelity-filled baseline, the better your information is going to be. So we turned that around on him. And we were hitting on all the
everything.
Things. And then what did he do? He left.
Because he was
tired of knowing.
Well, I had to call him out because
you schooled him.
Getting
into detail, Brian, I would say this. I would say this because, you know, folks, sometimes you got to do non-attribution because there's assholes in the world. They'll take umbrage and spend a lot of money trying to prove, yes, I am an ass, but I have more money than you. And this is what I mean by that. If you see a person that's wearing Under Armour, that doesn't make that person a martial artist, doesn't make them a sniper. If you see a person wearing yoga pants, that certainly doesn't mean they do yoga. you have to stop. We saw a human yesterday that had the Yeasty McCrack of my ass shorts on all the way up, and was overflowing voluptuously out of everything, and was drinking one of the drinks that said, you know, a million calories, you know what I'm saying, with all the frosh and all that other stuff. What are you projecting to everybody that's around you? You're projecting those things that are important. I'm not judging you.
No, it's not.
Nature of the fabric that you're wearing, but it is meaningful. If your outfit costs $3,000 and you're just going to, you know, get a haircut.
And that's, you brought up the perfect term. This is not meant to be judgmental in any way. And that's why I brought up that kid at the bar who said that stuff to me, because he was being judgmental. He wasn't conducting analysis. He wasn't.
Which meant he started with an unstable base.
Yes.
Exactly.
And I don't care about that. It just, because that happens sometimes, especially in short context, never in class when we're training. But like, if I just make an observation or say something on social media, people are like, well, you're judging. It's like, no, dude, I don't care about any of that stuff. I'm telling you, this is what this person's behavior is demonstrating. I don't reserve, it's not my right to judge people on what that is and what's right or wrong. That's between you and your God or whoever, you know, I mean, that's
your
not
lava
me.
Lamp in your room.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care. I don't care about that stuff. We're just articulating the behavior. So, you know, understanding that and being able to take people teach you how to treat them. Again, I'll just end it, that part with that is always, what is this person trying to treat me? I use that with the insurgent all the time. It's like, what is she teaching me right now? What is she trying to tell me right now? Because she's 11 and can't always use her words to describe her feelings, right? So it's just, okay, well, it makes it a little bit easier for an intervention policy and how I go in and talk to her, right? Because now I understand.
So let me take it one step further and we'll close that out and move on to the next one. Have you ever watched a pizza delivery person in a condominium complex and seen the one that pulls up, double parks against the fire hydrant, jogs up the steps and is back in no time? And the other person that's going slow, rolling down the window, holding up the tag. Could you reasonably assume that the first person had been there before? Yeah. So even driving through that, even their human behavior in that environment dictates that they're likely familiar with it. And that familiarity gives me an edge. That gives me an edge if I'm going to have to search out and find them and go, hey, that wasn't the pineapple pizza. I need my coupon back. So if it's low level or targeting, remember, we used to have to target, find, and kill people. So if those standards are this huge, you get what I'm saying? Then this lesser standard of drawing a reasonable conclusion, Brian, we can do that with aplomb. We can go around and do that and be right well more than we're wrong. But I also would caution folks, now you have people that are saying all over the world and people teach you how to treat them. Don't think you're an expert with these basics. We're given a 30,000 foot view without training and saying these are important factors that you can study right now so that when you show up and meet us, you'll be ahead of the game.
Yeah. Okay. So next one, it kind of, again, it builds on people teaching you how to treat them. The next one is most people want their say, not their way. So again, I'll ask you, what do you mean by that? That people want their say, not their way, and how is that significant? And how do I define that?
Yeah. So I have a great question, by the way. I have a very low tolerance for fellow humans, right? So I'm getting up out of my seat on a plane, and here's a real quick thing for planes, folks. If your number is a low number, like one or two, and it has a low alphabet like A or B, then you get up and get your luggage before anybody that's 36F. That's just simple physics, right? So I'm getting up on a plane, Brian, and everybody's so abrupt and so short on a plane. It's like the driving, you know, it's one step below road rage at all the time. And most people are stressed or anxious or drinking. So I get up to get my bag, and the guy that's across the aisle, okay, that has a higher number, so he needs to wait, gets up, and he's going to wiggle between me and the seat. And I said, hey, partner, give me a second, get the bag, and I'll move right out of your way. And he looks at me, Brian, chest to chest, and he says, I'm not your partner, and starts puffing up. And I go, you don't want the lesson you're about to learn. Do me a favor, have a seat. I'll be out of your way in a second. He knew by my conviction that I was willing to take him to task. He didn't want to fight there, Brian.
Right.
What he wanted to do is he wanted to object. And you know, just like the TV show. Yeah, but I strenuously object. Yeah, I get it. But most people are good because they want to bark, but they don't want to bite. They want to have their say. They don't want to have their way. And that's an important factor. Why? Because if he would have stood and then cocked his head in a manner or leaned forward, then I would have said, hey, this person is likely to defend their territory. I have to change or modify my tack, my direction, my distance, my speed, or wallop them, or sit down and go, You know,
right?
So my decisions under in extremis, let's say, under threatening conditions or nuanced conditions or novel conditions or fast paced shit, I always have to look for the danger and the opportunity. So if a person just wants to say, like in a line for fast food, or when the waitress comes by, or you know, when they're going by and they beep the horn and they flip you off and say something, that's it. That's almost always it.
Yep.
The person that slows down, puts it in park, and gets out of the car, that's different. So now you have a person that says this is not enough. And the way that I usually do it, Brian, when I'm explaining it to somebody that hasn't had a class or maybe doesn't know what the podcast is this person going to act up or they're going to act out? It's okay if you act up. It's okay to be the class clown and dance around in the street and laugh right. and fart and then right. run off on your skateboard. But you know what? If you pick the skateboard up, turn around and start walking back at me, now that's different to me. So again, these demonstrations of human behavior, most of them are autonomic. Most of them, the person doesn't even know. So I have to measure that against what a calm, rational, reasonable person would do in the same situation. And if it ends with words, words can't hurt me. Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. And walk away. Now, if that person continues and turns and changes their direction or distance or volume, now I'm worried that that person doesn't just want their say, Brian, they want their way as well. And those are the most dangerous people in my environment are the ones that want both.
No, and that's the idea is why we try to boil it down to a simple expression. There's so much to unpack there. I mean, this is obviously, like you said, we're hitting the wave tops, but that's kind of the point is, you know, if I understand that most people want their say another way, that it, look, I saved up money. I worked my ass off. I took my wife out on a date to a nice place and you fucked up my order. Okay. You know what? What went into this? We had to get a babysitter. We had to get dressed up. I had to save money. Like, I put a lot into this.
And this is once a month. It was a blue moon.
Yeah. And you screw up my order. Like, I have to get that. I need to talk to the manager. I have to let you know how upset I am. Now, does it change the fact that the order and what the restaurant can do? It doesn't matter. What I'm saying is where that comes from is you don't know what went into that. And so I have to get that off my chest. Most people know that the gate agent at the airport didn't call the pilot of that incoming plane and say, "Hey, pull back on the throttle a little bit. You know what? I'm busy down here. Why don't you be 20 minutes late?" Right. But what does everyone do? Who do they complain to? They go up and complain to the gate agent because they have to have their say. Look, I got to get this off my chest. This is also why social media works so well and why it's so popular because everyone gets to have their say.
So social media.
Regardless of who you are, regardless of your status, regardless of what you know on the topic, anything, you get to have your say. And Greg, sometimes to the person that everyone's talking about, to that national figure, you get to comment on there and have your say.
Social media is a drive-by shooting. People don't put a lot of thought into it and it's out there. And now you can go right to the top for very little money. And you know,
everybody, and that round's going to go through the neighbor's window and kill that kid.
Exactly. And kill the kid. And that was an unintended consequence. And we never think about it. That's why it's unintended. So I would say this. I would say when you read editorials, the editorial is the person that say, "Hey, rare, but wrong. You missed this up. This is a mess and everything else." They don't put at the bottom, "You dirty bastard. And I swear to Christ, I'm going to hide in your hedge and hit you with the shovel next time I see you." Why? Because we live in a civilized society where we can have recourse. We can argue about things. And that's why we got to tell people to stop bristling against words, because words aren't going to be the ones that are going to cause you the damage. So in this context, the person wants their say. Let them have their say and go, "You know, I didn't see it from that angle. I sincerely apologize. Let me pick up the tab on your dinner. Let me do whatever it takes." What is that called? Well, that's called de-escalation. And that's what's kept society moving forward in perpetuity. And if you see that rarity where that person then does bristle and starts taking off their jacket or puts down or parks or does that, now you know that you're in trouble. So how far left, how far before that are the cues and the clusters and the indices that I can measure against at what a reasonable person would do? So, and I'll give you a very simple one, folks. If you're driving and a person is speeding and the person who's speeding is also lane changing, and they're lane changing without signal, okay, you're going to be in trouble with that person sooner or later. So slow down, and you're going to say, I've been driving my entire life. I've never been in an accident, because you're paying attention.
Yeah.
But you have to pay attention to the other drivers. Yeah. And so the idea behind that is you have to pay attention to the weather. That's a contributing factor, and the speed limit and the highway and the volume of traffic. So why, when you're in humans, do we forget those simple rules, right? The higher the volume, like, for example, Brian, if it was just you and I bumped into you in a restaurant and I said, hey, I'm sorry, and you go, hey, blow me. Okay. I'm good with that. But listen, Brian, if there was three of my friends with me and it was my birthday party and I had a drink on board, that math changed it dramatically.
The calculus changes on that one.
We need to know that.
We've talked about that before, and I won't get into that on this one, but one-on-one, most humans can be reasoned with and you can talk to. Once we start getting into groups, the larger the group is, the dumber we get. But that's you know, sort of a it changes. This is the thing. I know what you're getting at, and I want everyone to understand it, is that when we're talking about what your role is in that situation, or what to do or what to think next, one, when you're conducting predictive analysis and you're trying to figure out what's happening next, you have to constantly update your observation based on new and incoming, or update your hypothesis with new incoming information. So you change the calculus. You can change the trajectory. So if something changes in that next second, now your outcome could potentially change. That's what complexity is, right? There's multiple interdependent factors that affect the outcome of the situation. And so, you know, when I look at
time and distance, for example,
and what you just brought up is if most people want their say, not their way. I mean, how many times have you seen me do it where someone says something and I just do the, okay, go on. And I let them go because I'm trying to determine, are they just trying to get something off their chest and they're upset? Or is this person, they might start attacking me or someone around
here?
When
you do that, you do that with no emotion.
Zero.
No posturing, nothing. You remain calm. And you say that. So what did you just do? You just threw a rock in the pond and you're seeing where the ripples go. Now, if there's a dam and the ripples are hitting the dam and it's starting to come back to you forcefully, you know what to do. But it's warning you.
And, you know, I'm trying to give them options, right? I didn't say, well,
of course you are.
I said, you get to decide the outcome. Where do you want to go with this?
That's called de-escalation.
Yes.
And if you would do that because your daughter was involved with another daughter in an argument, then that would be called duty to intervene. What we do is we masquerade these big terms and we try to say all of these other things are important. And hey, take a look at these biases, when it's exactly what we've talked about before, the items on the playground. Brian, we learn everything we need to know on that playground and how to get along and how not to get along. And, you know, avoidance is a huge key. Avoidance. So we say avoid doing these things because they'll have a physiological effect. Well, we're talking about avoiding doing something in human behavior because it'll have a detrimental effect. If you say go on or I'm sorry,
can you tell me more?
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. What you're doing is your tabula rasa, you're starting over. If it's like and okay, and you leave that hanging, the pregnant pause, then you know what? One of the outcomes might be a smack in the mouth. And if you're not paying attention to that, that ambush or surprise could put you in a deficit situation. So why would you want to be there? Why would you want to start on the ground, Brian, if you could start standing up with a stable base and increase your distance, for example, or modify the time differential with your distance? And that's what we're talking about. Because you're a concealed weapon holder doesn't give you any additional rights. Because you're in the right in this situation with this ass that's out of line doesn't make you in the right, Brian.
Right.
It's okay to disengage because this person isn't thinking clearly anyway. And what are you going to gain? You're going to gain. So have your say, don't have your way, move out smartly.
Yeah. And again, that's an important one to determine because it leads right into the next one as well, right? Most people want their say, not their way. Okay. So what's the difference? Because that's sort of where the danger lies in a sense of like, okay, this person doesn't just want their say, they're going to act, they want to do something. And so that leads right into the last one we'll talk about today. Okay. And that's just, and we should spend some time on this one because we get some questions, but demonstrations of intent are more important than motive. right? So meaning what someone does, they all humans will demonstrate their intent in some way, but we say that's more important than maybe why they're doing something or the reason behind it. So I really want you to kind of define this, because motive is such a big word in
great question in
pop culture even, but it's a term thrown around quite a bit that I think has less value than what people give it, but go ahead.
Yeah, so the idea is very simple, folks. Motive is a reason that you did something, but most times it's unconscious, so therefore it's hidden, it's surreptitious, it's not obvious. So when we talk about what the motive for murder is, we almost laugh at it, because if you murdered somebody, the motive was clearly to kill the person, to stop them from breathing. And what we try to do is we try to tag a bunch of other stuff on. So why intent is more important than murder from a legal standpoint? You don't need motive in any conviction anywhere on any case. So therefore, why do defense attorneys bring it in? Why do prosecutors bring it in? Because it helps lubricate the case. Hey, if I can get behind that motive, I might understand in my own life, but it doesn't matter, because we're dealing with idiots. The idiot that says my kid would never molest another kid. The idiot that says my daughter would never commit suicide. The idiot that says my son would never murder his entire family. Anybody can do anything at any time, depending on the outward or inward amount of pressure that they're feeling. So stop. We don't know what the motive is, and it's not important because we don't need it. But intent will demonstrate to you what's likely to happen next. If I'm reaching in my pocket, that's different than standing legs akimbo. If I'm playing with my waist as I'm going into a store, that's either I'm very fashion conscious or I may be harboring a hidden weapon. So the intent means the balled fist. The intent means jutting one's neck and chest out. The intent means stopping and turning to be confrontational. And Brian, that will warn us of danger and opportunity every time, where motive gives us nothing. You know what motive does? Motive helps me sleep at night thinking that Jeffrey Dahmer was different than my wife, husband, kid, or the neighbor kid. You know, that's all it gives us.
And that's a good point, because the motive, the reason behind some of this stuff isn't even always clear to the person doing it. They don't say this is why I'm doing it, right? Exactly. Or it's some convoluted message taken. I mean, look at any manifesto that someone's written. Look at any, you know, whether it's written or they record themselves before they go kill a bunch of people or shoot up a school or something. It's rambling diatribes taken from all kinds of different places that they read. I mean, even the guy, because everyone, if you ever read any of Ted Kaczynski's stuff, people would say, well, he's a genius. So he's a genius mathematician. But if you look at what he's talking about, he's all over the place. He's politically all over the place. He's you know, institutionally all over the place with what
because
he's
broken.
He's a broken human being.
Exactly. So Stop trying to build them up. See, that's it. Motivation tries to what was the motivation from Isla Vista? They had to come across and they had to say, you know, our boy was an incel. He didn't get laid.
Yeah.
You know what? A whole bunch of people that didn't get laid in high school, and they didn't go out and murder their family and their friends and then drive through traffic.
Do you notice the motive changes every few years? Well, now this is the new thing. So I can write books about it. I can study. Oh, now this is it. Now, I mean, when's the last time we talked about, Islamic extremism and terrorist groups?
Because
that's not in the news anymore.
We're over that.
It's like, wait a minute. Does that mean
Al Shabaab is gone, Brian?
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
that's the point.
You were saying this was such the biggest transnational threat to the United States, to our way of life. But
we spent then 20 one day years fighting.
But
them.
Then one day it's like, well, maybe not so much. It's like, okay, so are we making this shit up? And I'm not saying this is like a made up thing. What I'm saying is we attribute these values to it that don't necessarily mean anything, because the person, let's say, committing a crime or acting a certain way, they're not even clear on what you're going to tell me. A 16-year-old kid that wants to shoot up a school is clear minded and knows exactly why they're doing it. Go F yourself. Yep. That's absolutely insane. So this motive thing, you can go
so stop.
Well, exactly. The idea, Greg, too, is you can get into, I look at it this way too. All right. Some almost like a personal safety type standpoint or, you know, whatever, let's say you've got kids, your family or house, or just yourself, right? What would you rather do? Would you rather take the time learning and understanding all of the different reasons why someone would want to attack you and rob you, or Would you rather take your time learning and understanding all the different ways that someone could do that to you? Because those are two completely different things. You get what I'm saying? Meaning, if there may be 100 reasons why someone wants to hurt me. There may be one reason, right? But there's only so many ways that they can do it. There's only so many methods that they can
use. Exactly right. So martial arts through the ages has been based on that. That's why we have only a certain amount of left hand, upward, knife, punch, defense, whatever. And let's take a look at historical perspective. If I come sliding up to your location, put it in park, get out of the car, leave the car running and leave the car door open and go into a place, I'm never coming back to that car, Brian. I've abandoned that property. That is a demonstration of intent that I can go back through of all of these active shooters and take a look at. We hate talking about Texas because it's been such a debacle talking about that school shooting. The driver of the vehicle that created the accident was also the school shooter. And he was so intent on what he was going to do next, Brian, that he made stupid mistakes and got in an accident and then started shooting at the vehicles and the people in the intersection well before he climbed the fence with the bag of guns and got to the school. People don't want to look at that. So the further out I can see demonstration of intent, the more reasonable my conclusion will be as we approach what's likely going to be ground zero. And we can even determine that. So if we take a most likely course of action and we plot it on a graph, and we take most dangerous course of action, plot it on a graph, where those two cross, the nexus that creates is a likely zone where those two things will come to bear and create either danger or opportunity. So what does that mean? That means that if intent is more important than motive and the person's not repeating the behavior, like I know people that flex their hands, but if the person is making the fist and then they're taking that step forward and they're bending at the waist, those are likely fighting words being acted out in human kinesics and body language. So why would I not take those into account and start taking a look and drawing these little things in my brain? I would draw a parentheses, you know, the opening parenthesis. And I would say, okay, how many of those am I getting? And if I'm getting one, then two, then three, then those echoes are coming back the other way, which means I'm likely to have problems. We're right back to the ripple analogy, throwing a rock in the pond. Almost nobody gives a shit about anything. Almost nobody pays attention to their surrounding. Almost everybody gets in their car and goes where they're going. They don't meander around. People don't go to the city market shopping center to look around. They got a plan, Brian.
And this is kind of how I boil it down to as well. It's like you don't just wander through your day haphazardly bouncing around your neighborhood. You've been doing so many drugs for so long. Your synapses aren't firing correctly. Yeah, that's what you'll see. But whatever it is that you do, you have some intent behind it, right? There's a reason why you get up and go to the store. There's a reason why you're in that specific aisle. There's all of everything you do is done with some intent, whether you are conscious of it or not. And that's the point, is if I stick to those, I can read and understand a human's intent, right? Versus what they're doing. I mean, you always give the example of, you know, if you buy a shotgun, right? If you saw the barrel and saw the buttstock off of that shotgun, you have demonstrated your intent. You have modified something for the purposes other than which it was designed. Now, the idea is whether
it has nothing to do with that you're going to do a bank robbery, Brian. Right. It's that I modified this item in my environment to suit a need. I fashioned a tool, and that's what separates us from other societies and groups, right? So why wouldn't we look? We're talking historical perspective. We're talking physiology, psychology, sociology. We're talking human dynamics, human behavior, human performance, those certain things. Now, if that person that also cut that down fashioned a coat hanger so they could hang it over one shoulder, that meant that they wanted some time that they were going to use it hands-free and other times that they wanted to be able to access it quickly. Those are logical reasons that somebody's not going to say, well, they bought the shotgun and sawed off the barrel and put on the coat hanger so they could get into an old style car if they locked out their keys. That doesn't make sense, right? So why, Brian, let me ask you the audience a very simple question, but you're going to be my foil on this. Why, when we ask for the shitter keys at a gas station, do they give it to us with a cinder block?
The big, exactly. They want it back.
Okay. Yeah, see, you got it. So they're demonstrating that previous intent was important.
Yes.
You know? That makes sense, Brian. So all we have to do is consistently update baselines. And the more fidelity that we have in a baseline, and I mean fidelity, I mean the smallest thing, the sights, the smells, the sounds, the feels, the taste, those are things, the bullet holes, the rubbling. You go into a neighborhood and you see the grass is really growing up and nobody's out there string trimming. Are they not out there string trimming because they can't afford a string trimmer? Because they're too old in that neighborhood? Because there's a drive-by shooting and they don't want to get clipped? Those are the type of things we should be asking ourselves constantly. But we don't. We go gas station, take the exit, go get gas. We say hotel, motel. That's not that expensive. And it's on the way of where I'm going. Those decisions that we make without introspection, without comparison, are the ones that always get us into the trick bag. The ones that we reason and we say, hey, there's an intent demonstration going on. What am I missing? That gives us the gift of time and distance, and we're likely to make a much more reasonable conclusion.
No, and that's but the that's a good point. Obviously, there's sort of everything we're talking about is within a defined context, and yep. to not look at what we're trying to do with a lot of this too is reduce the ambiguity, reduce the uncertainty. How do exactly. I not make it so complex? How do I cut through all this stuff that I'm thinking up in my head that is mostly nonsense, but I don't know that it's nonsense. Maybe it's relevant in some other situation, but not this one. Right. And not apply, because the idea is I want a reduction in, false positives and false negatives, meaning, okay, this is a problem. I might jump to an unreasonable conclusion. I don't want to do that. Same thing. You know, I'm not taking this seriously enough. I want to make sure I am. So and what everyone wants, of course, is, well, that's list, and give me a list of things I need to look for. Or what is the body language telling you? It's like, look, before you get, you're getting into the minutia, you haven't even mastered you're not even standing on solid ground yet. You're still standing in the air.
So you know what the other side of that same coin is? Boyd's OODA loop. And I hate to go back to Boyd's OODA loop. But Brian, if you're trying to reduce the complexity and make sense to the masses, the last thing you want to do is go, so Pythagoras, get up and tell us what you know.
Right.
That's not the way to go. That's why we street things down. We street them down to the most obvious usable content where a person can go, hey, I've seen that in my life. Because
exactly.
If you can't equate it to yourself, to your own baseline, to your day-to-day, you're going to miss the nuance. And once you miss the nuance, that's where the danger is hiding. Danger hides in the seams and gaps we don't consider. Why don't we consider it? Because we don't attend to it. Why don't we attend to it? Because it doesn't fall within the purview of our attention. So what does that mean? To fix you, you got to change your attention. So intent is one of those things that should be number one. I look for those indices of intent in my environment, and I'll draw more reasonable conclusions.
Right. And then that's kind of what you just sort of explained is how to use all four of these things that we just talked
and what about sets us apart. I would say both parts of that, Brian.
Yeah,
what sets our methodology apart from others?
We can either sit here on these podcasts and go into the detail of all of the science behind this. And you might, what people will do is like, wow, that's really cool. But you know what? That's not useful.
It's our job. At the end of the day, you don't need
that. That's the thing, is like, it's not useful to understand all of the different, studies that went into this, because have you seen that? Have you understand? If I use that term, people are the same all over the world. Like, I'm going to a meeting. Okay, what can I expect at that meeting? Well, people are the same. So they're at work. What are they trying to do? What's on their head? Okay, what are they
teaching?
Do you
have a favorite chair? Well, they're likely to have a favorite chair. So ask first. Again, I'm not going to go back.
Do they probably sit in the same spot in there
every time they go to a meeting?
Right? Okay, well, what are they trying to teach me? What are they showing to me? What is this person? Are they getting upset? Right? If they want their say, or do they want their way? Right? Demonstrations of intent. What is this person demonstrating to me? If I go down these four things, like, I can use them anywhere in any situation, man. Like, I use this at home with the insurgent and my wife to be a better communicator. I use it on the street to make sure I'm not going to get fucking killed. I use it for planning purposes with everything that you do. And if I start to understand this just at a basic theoretical level, or I take one out today and go throughout your day, throughout your week, go, people are the same all over the world. Okay, I'm going to gather artifacts and evidence that would support that claim. And then the scales will fall from your eyes. You'll see things and go, oh, I get it. Now I know why that person is parked over there and not here, because they had an odd shaped thing they were carrying out of Home Depot. So they knew they couldn't load load that in their car here because there's too many vehicles parked here. So they parked over there. That makes sense to me.
Brilliant.
And that's how that's what situational awareness is. It's not some fucking buzz term for something someone stole from someone else. It's the perception, right, of you know, the elements of your environment, the recognition exactly. of what those things mean, and the understanding of the artifacts and evidence and how they come together and support each other. I mean, that's what yes. we're talking about with these. So here's four lenses, in a sense, that you can use in any situation. So I think that covered a lot, Greg, and I know we made it an hour, so that was good.
I would add this, Brian. I would add, never put a round peg in a square hole.
Right.
Read what the environment's telling you. What's a bias? And biases can be healthy. What's a bias? A bias is when you let a obstacle come between you and the truth. So don't. Look at what the ground truth is. Look at what the smell is telling you. Look at what the faces on the people are telling you. Are the people all running away from you? Maybe you got Limburger in your pocket. Those type of suggestions are generally the likelihood. The most dangerous course of action is that seam, that gap, that pterodactyl that you didn't see that's going to swoop out of the sky and crush your skull. Stop putting round pegs in square holes. Read what you're seeing. Compare it against a fidelity-filled baseline. And these four, Brian, these four, you know what I would do? I would put them on. Remember that thing that used to click with your hands and it would make the little tape with the raised letters on them? And it was like black tape with white raised letters.
The little P-Touch things or whatever, the little printer things you're talking about?
So, yeah. Label printer. And so I would label print a couple of these things and I would put them in odd spots. And just as Brian said, what comes up today on the lottery today is most people want their saying out their way. And go out and find them in your environment, because that's going to help your brain assimilate, but it's also going to help you share this knowledge with your wife, your significant other, your husband, your kids, your non-binary friend across the street, and your dog. It's going to fit everywhere.
I've literally taught the insurgent all four of these. We're still working on the fourth one.
I bet you use them without ever thinking of them.
The demonstrations of intent are a little bit, I do it differently with her because she's 11, but the same thing is like, look, it's look for what people do, not what they say.
Yeah.
When you're trying to understand these things, and I can assimilate, people are showing you what's important. They're telling you.
Exactly.
She see how she came up and said that right away? That's the most important thing in her life right now. And that's why, and so she's kind of like, oh, I get it. Everyone's on transmit. And I'm glad we kind of covered these. Hopefully people found them enlightening. And then of course we get other podcast episodes. Obviously we get into detail about some of the stuff, or we give examples. There's more on the Patreon side and we have that going. So if anyone has any questions, obviously they can always reach out to us. But any other final words, Greg? And then we'll wrap
up. I do want one final one today, okay. Brian. So watching and reading and opining. We all look at Nostradamus and we want to look backwards and look at those quatrains. And we've got a mental image of what he looks like and him sitting there writing all this information. Nostradamus's first name was Mike. He was Michael Nostradamus. If that doesn't put things in perspective for you, he was just honest to God. Look it up. Look it up. He was just the guy that lived next door to you that was writing his manifesto. And other shit, we made it up, Brian. We made it up in our own brain.
Yeah, it was Tommy Socrates. So
No, I'm being absolutely serious. Take a look. Look it up, buddy.
Mike Nostradamus. Maybe that's the name of this episode. Who's Mike
Nostradamus? There you go. Right there. Have you met him? He lives right next door.
All right.
Well, great stuff.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for tuning in.
Thank you.
Obviously, reach out, please share it with a friend, leave a review if you enjoyed the episode. And we really appreciate that stuff. So thanks so much for tuning in.
Yes,
don't forget that training changes behavior. Okay.
That's all for today, folks. But if you'd like even more content, you can head over to our Patreon page. The link can be found in the episode details. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media, and please tell your friends about the show. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you for your support.